Hello, everybody, and welcome back inside the Shark Tank for another episode of the podcast. We are well and truly in the running at the moment. My name is Lewis, and joining me to discuss sales 37 point to 31 win over poor Harlequins who've had their playoff hopes dented is my colleague and good friend James. James, how you going, mate?
Very good, mate. It's great to be back with you. Shame Alex can't be here today, but, you know, he's been holding it all together. And we've actually got a win to talk about. So, you know, I'm always volunteering to come on the pod when we've won. Less keen when we haven't.
I mean, I think we've all been in that situation a little bit over the last couple of months, trying to get the diaries aligned. And it's a lot easier when you've got a bonus point win to discuss. So let's just get straight into it. I know Alex was a bit cheeky on Twitter in the aftermath because I think it was the Telegraph was talking about how this was Harlequins fumbling the bag. But, I mean, what a win for Sale. And what a much-needed win. I know there's been so much talk about how this is the closest season ever. It feels like we get that every year, doesn't it? It's closest season ever, super competitive. No one knows who's going to be in the run for the top four come the end of the season. But it's games like this that kind of keep us, keep our head above water. Not only is it 5 points, five much needed points, but it's also, an important win over a team that's going to be right there in the thick of it with us for the rest of the running.
Yeah, it's a really good point. I think for us, we're in such massive doldrums, you know, going into New Year and the early part of the New Year, we're running on fumes, as they say. And then, you know, with those friendlies that we had before the season kick-started and then starting off with a loss, it really did feel like this is the worst state, like least optimistic we've been as a Sale fan for probably about 3 years, something like that, like a considerable amount of time, which was something we weren't used to. And I suppose there was a bit of an emotional reaction to that. Well, I think you can see there's been a bit of an emotional reaction to that by Alex Anderson, by the coaching group and by the players. You know, because we are quite a few bodies down. We have been less lucky this year with injuries than maybe we were last year where everything kind of went right. And, the guys who are going out there putting in performances, you know, you can really see the confidence returning. And actually, you know, think about what Harlequins did a few years ago where they basically came up on the rails, scraped into the top four, miles off the top three, and won the Premiership. I still think great for them. They've still got a star on their shirt, but I'd always think, okay, well, when you've got, I think that was a COVID related thing as well. So when you're playing a final in July or whatever it was, that's always going to suit Harlequins. And it made me think a little bit, actually, it's forcing a change in the way that we play, Lewis, because, you know, and I think this is a positive and a negative, by the way, because what they've done by having this break over the Six Nations period is they've taken out February and March, two of the less good months to play rugby, out of the calendar. Nobody's mentioning it. No journalists mentioned it at all. And it just made me think, you know what? For teams like Sale, this is on paper bad news. Compared to a Harlequins or a Bristol, for example, who just want to run it from everywhere. And so actually to rock up and go, you know what, we need bonus points. That's the big learning from this year. Even in the winter months, people were picking up bonus points. We weren't. Well, we went and got 5 points pretty early in this game. And we outscored Quins, which I don't think people, including myself, thought we were actually capable of this year, actually scoring this many points. We obviously did it against Exeter. But this is another example. And shows that we can do it.
And it's a scoreline that I think actually flatters Harlequins a little bit as well. Because, yes, I know the game was going down to the final play. And obviously, Quins did have a chance to win it at the end. But actually, the try that I think it's... Is it Northmoor scores on in the 78th minute? I mean, that is a shot to nothing. Right, you playing out for their own 22. I know it will look good on the highlight reel. It'll look good on the highlights after the game. But actually, that was kind of an all or nothing play. You know, if they get turned over or whatever, there's a good chance that we stay down the other end and score another try, and then you know you win it by you know a margin of 15, 16 points rather than six. And so it felt like, yes, I know it's, you know, it's a one score game. And I think we can feel a little bit disappointed actually that we maybe didn't ice it, you know, and gave Quinns two points off the back of it. But actually, yeah. I think it was a pretty comprehensive win.
It was very comprehensive, Lewis, but you're absolutely right. I mean, look, there's virtually no negativity required on this podcast, right? But about Sale, we're going to talk about Newcastle in a bit, and of course, just set the scene for them beating us next week. If you're a Harlequins fan and you are those Harlequins players and coaches, you are delighted, because that was from a turnover as well. That Northmore try came from completely nowhere. And actually, they had a bit of momentum at the end of the game where, you know, they nearly stole it. And that's why they got the headlines in the Telegraph, right? Because it was a crazy comeback. But actually, apart from the second half of the first half, we battered them. So for 60 minutes, we absolutely battered them. And for 20 minutes, they played better than we did. And they still nearly won the game. So if you're a Quinns thing, and they always come up and have a shocker, pretty much, up at the up in Salford. So for them to be walking away with two bonus points, you know, they've lost, they've won one less game than us and are 2 points clear of us. So if you're using an example of what we've got wrong this year, it's the difference between those two sides in regards to bonus points. And so Quinns will be absolutely delighted. So that's the only downside, because they're in fourth. You know, if you actually look at the top three now, they look relatively difficult to reel back in. So really, we're going after Quinns' slot. They do have a difficult game, I think, against Leicester next. I think they're against Leicester next. We're against Newcastle. So, you know, depending on how things go there, things might look different in a week. But I think they'll be absolutely delighted with the 2 points.
And I guess maybe just to wrap the bow on this introductory section, it goes back to the point that you made, which is, imagine if we'd played Harlequins at the end of January or the start of February. Maybe the conditions aren't as good. The recipe for success for Sale in this game, to your point, we, you know, we kind of bullied them. We really sort of took the fight to them. If you do that on a cold night, on a cold Friday night in February, Northmore probably doesn't score that try at the end, and we probably win quite comfortably. And so it's interesting how these little moments and little decisions that are made sort of across the season are actually not actively working against us. You know, we're not going to be peddling conspiracy theories here, but it is interesting. And I think, again, we're going to talk a lot about the table over the next couple of weeks. You know, Quinns are 2 points ahead of us at the moment, and that's probably a result of the fact that they were able to score, you know, was it five tries? Five tries on a decently hard track in, you know, a Sunday afternoon. Outside of that, though, like you said, we don't want to be too negative. So let's talk about some positives here. Aaron Reid, brace of tries. Rafi Quirk, a pretty fortunate try, but hey, you know, he still had to score it. Sam Dugdale and Ben Curry also crossing the whitewash for Sale. Not only is it five tries and one of the few times we've done that this year, but how good to see all five of those tries come from Sale Academy products as well. Just a little wrinkle in there. And again, you start to think about where we've sort of fallen down this year or kind of where we're going. I think Sunday was a really good example of just how strong that academy spine is through the team. We're seeing players like Rafi Quirk maybe mature from where they were a season or two ago. They're sort of rebounding, you know, from maybe that peak in 2022 when he gets capped by England. Aaron Reid, two really well-taken tries. And then you've got, you know, the likes of Manu Tuilagi at the moment being able to burst over the game line. So it just felt like this, maybe for the first time all year, was kind of where we wanted to be from a squad composition perspective. We're getting some of those players back from injury. We're getting, we're seeing some impressive development mid-season from some of our younger academy talent, and it's resulting in wins. So I guess, I mean, where do you want to start with that, James? You know, is it the five tries? Is it Aaron Reid getting two? Is it Ben Curry's return and the impact he's making? Is it Rafi Quirk getting back to form? We've got a lot to get through.
Yeah, I let's start with the attacking game, because, you know, we have asked questions of Sale this year. You know, even the games we've won, I think we've been relatively poor on the most part from an attacking rugby perspective, and seem to have gone backwards. Well, let's give the credit where it's due here now, because I thought, apart from that second half of the first half, where we basically passed the initiative to Quinns through errors, through penalties, ill discipline, and frankly, just like knock-ons, etc. Outside of that, when the skill set was high and the basics were good, the fluency was fabulous. And I thought every time we got the ball, we looked like Harlequins. It looks like we could score every time we got the ball, which, you know, it's kind of like it's an exciting brand of rugby. You know, it kind of can have your heart in your mouth a little bit, but it was absolutely fantastic. And, you know, I think there was a stat in there that Gus Waugh has kicked the ball more than any other nine. Well, you know, he is one of the best kickers, I think, in the Premiership, honestly. And when Quirk came on, you saw the difference straight away between the quality of the box kicking. I think if Quirk can get up to a good level on his box kicking, you know, his other parts of his game have returned. But, you know, Gus also has a really good pass off both hands. And I think the ball was in Ford's hands. It was in Rob Dupree's hands as well. I thought he got his hand on the ball a lot in the wide channels. And he has a good turn of pace. And I think, you know, especially when O'Flaherty came on, that we saw a big difference there as well. Both him and Reed really getting on the outside, you know, attacking that weak shoulder on the inside. And it was just an absolute pleasure to see our wingers so instrumental in the outcome of the game. Because, you know, we haven't seen that. Carpenter remained really good under the high ball. I thought his decision-making was better than it was earlier in the season as well. And as you said, it really, really helps when you're getting over the gain line. Jean-Luc Dupree was absolutely fantastic. But massive shout-out to Manu Tuilagi, who I think it was, if it wasn't his best game in a sales shirt, it was in the top three. Every single time he had his hands on the ball, he got over the gain line. Defensively, he was absolutely monstrous. And I think he played the full 80, which is, we haven't seen him do much in a sales shirt. So it's like, this is the Manu Tuilagi we wanted to sign, and now we're kind of into the final four games of seeing him. So it's a bit of a shame, but he was fantastic.
I think I'm glad you've already brought it up, because we'll do three-word reviews in a moment. But I did just want to pause very briefly on Tom O'Flaherty, who had, you know, a similarly impactful performance. You know, 23 minutes off the bench, comes on for Tom Roebuck. First, first involvement is basically the charge down that leads to Rafi Quirk's try. Getting in under the high ball, which was as part of the build-up to, I think it was it Aaron Reed's try? The second one off the Rob Dupree pass. Again, you just sort of saw for the first time that, you know, we weren't necessarily struggling from a depth perspective. We were able to bring players on in impactful positions. Rafi Quirk was able to come on and play 36 minutes off the bench rather than the last, you know, 10, because we've had to ride Gus Waugh. There was just all those kind of small moments. I think getting a start out of Bevan Rodd, who's only played a handful of games for us this year, he looked very impactful. It did just feel like, again, for the first time in a long time, all the pieces that we've assembled had really come to the fore, and we weren't necessarily beholden to the players that we didn't have. And I think, again, I've noticed it quite significantly, the impacts that we've seen from having Ben Curry back on the field as a natural leader, but also just in terms of his, just core skills, you know, breakdown threat. And I think he's been working quite well with some Sam Dugdale in that regard. But his role as a link player in the attack, his ability to carry, his ability to lead the defensive line, it's no surprise that we've seen an upturn in performance from Sale when we've had a player like Ben Curry back in the team. Before we do three-word reviews, anything else that immediately jumped out to you from this game in terms of individual performances or that you wanted to shout about?
I mean, Yeah, I thought James Harper did reasonably well. I mean, I don't think he's ever going to be the best scrummager, but he sort of held on in the scrum. But I just wanted to flag, you know, because when you've got Harper and Rod on, you're never going to be a dominating scrum. But I thought they played a massive part in the open, expansive game that we did play. So that was quite interesting from a mindset. But just an interesting sort of state of affairs watching Tommy Taylor come on with Simon McIntyre and Will Griff John returning. They were putting the screw on in the scrum, and it made you remember just how good Will Griff John was for us. I don't know what happened down at the Scarlets. He never got near their first choice side and got released essentially. And you know, look at where the Scarlets are now. And he rocks up in a sales shirt and he looks like he's never left, you know. So I think that's an, we obviously want to bring through, you know, Fajr, but I just think, you know, if he's available and he's a bit cheap, I think Will Griff looks like a good bet. And then just finally, just, you know, man of the match, Sam Dugdale. You know, I don't think he's had the season that he had last year, where every time he came in, it looked like, you know, we weren't missing a Curry. This year, I think because we've been missing both Curries and Dan Dupria, which is essentially our first choice back row, you know, I think he hasn't quite been able to have that level of consistency. Well, I thought he was and I think he's had a few knocks as well. I think it was absolutely brilliant. I was surprised to see him in the 7 shirt rather than the 6 shirt. But they kind of played like the two Curries do, sort of almost like left and right. Mm. And he was instrumental in some key turnovers, some key, you know, tackling, but he also carries really, really well as well. So huge shout out to Sam Dugdale, lucky to have him. And, you know, where we are a bit short at the moment is that second row, back row depth off the bench. We've obviously got Andrews in on loan. Ben Bamba, you know, I think he's still establishing himself at this level. So, you know, put them, you know, Sam Dugdale putting in a shift and Ben Curry being fit, as you said, is, and John Luke being fit. I mean, we're quite reliant on these guys.
Just two things very quickly on Will Griff-Tron. I think it's important that we contextualize mid-season signings. I think the bar for success is relatively low. You want a player who can come in and make a bit of an impact, but they're not miracle workers. I thought, if that is all we get from Will Griff-John this season, it's probably not a bad return on investment. You'd like a little bit more, but again, just being able to sort of steady the scrum and again, offer a non-teenage prop to bring off the bench, I think makes a big difference. So that's the positive for Will Griff-John. The negative, I am not sure about the Dr. Eggman from Sonic look. I wouldn't say that to his face because he's a very big man. I don't know what happened to your point down at the Scarlets, but yeah, I'm not entirely sure I'm riding with that look. Anyway, three-word reviews. So thank you to everyone who submitted them. I know it's the first time in a while that we've been able to pull some of these out. So thank you to everyone who's been submitting them over the past couple of months. Peter Taylor, Chaos Agents Defeated. Richard Lilly, Found Our Attack. Tony Jebson, Shark Attack Prevails. Otis Donnelly agrees with you, James. Dugdale is phenomenal. Stewie Lee, Efficient, Exciting Attack. And Greg Fletch, Manu nullifies Esther Hazen. Now, it is no surprise that there is a lot of chat here about our attack, which has really sort of come to life for the last sort of two home games. And I guess, James, my question to you is, what can we kind of learn from this Harlequins game? I know we've had a lot of chats over the past couple of years about, you know, does Dupria at 13 work alongside George Ford? You know, what's our best back three to roll out in key games? Do you think, I mean, it's quite easy to say, given we've just scored 37 points and won, it's quite easy to say we should stick with the team that we've got at the moment. But do you think this is a glimpse as to what we can expect for the rest of the season? Manu at 12, the big ball carrier in the inside channel. Rob Dupria at 13, acting as a playmaker like we saw for that Aaron Reed try. And then Reed, Roebuck, Carpenter is a back three with a Flaherty available to basically cover either wing.
Mm. Yes, I think honestly, if we're going to get into the top four, we need to score try bonus points. You know, obviously Sam James is a fabulous player and a playmaker as well, but I just think, you know, I think Rob has just hit some form. So I think, you know, you have to go with it. I do question whether Rob Dupria is the right choice, honestly, to win a Premiership final against anybody, because those games are inherently going to be tighter. And, you know, any try scored, you know, in the outside backs that isn't a rolling maul is inevitably going to involve decision-making by a defender in the 13 channel most of the time. You know, so I'm still questioning whether he is the right person, honestly, to actually, you know, to win the Premiership and to even win multiple Premierships. But, I mean, let's be honest, the start of the season, he was our best player at 10. And it is a problem we're still wrestling with here. You know, when Ford is unavailable and with England, because Ford's young enough to go to the next World Cup. So let's not get too carried away that he's going to be massively available for us. I think, does Rob move back to 10, or does this re-signing of Tom Curtis on a long-term contract start to show that actually maybe, you know, Rob's going to stay in the 13 shirt now, and Tom Curtis will be the backup fly off. So we'll see. Anyway, we'll see what happens there. But I thought that was absolutely fantastic. And both Ford and Dupree played a massive role in getting the ball in the hands of our wingers. And it really simplified Manu's role, because, you know, you weren't trying to have almost, you weren't even using him as a dummy runner. You're just saying, look, it's a bit like the Quinn's used Esterhazen, right? It's like, look, you know he's coming, but best of luck trying to stop him. You know, and I think that is the right way to go. Just really simplify the game. Don't try and be too complicated with some of our backs moves. Just ram it up the middle with Manu Tuilagi, and then just get it as wide as quickly as possible. You know, second, maybe it's probably third, fourth phase. Probably do a couple of forward phases, a Manu Tuilagi phase, and then get it wide as quickly as possible. So I think that's what I saw. I mean, it'd be interesting to see on Twitter if people disagree with my view on that. Maybe it is more complicated. I think we're just trusting the decision makers, really. We're trusting Ford, Dupree and Carpenter in the outside channels, and we're trusting Reed and Flaherty and Roebuck to either go on the outside with their pace or cut on the inside and retain the ball. I think that's pretty much what we did. And, you know, one of the reasons for Quirk coming on so early, I think, is, you know, the scrum halves are blowing a bit because they're having to run from side to side.
And again, we sort of see, maybe for the first time this year, and maybe the Exeter game notwithstanding, just what an impact having that front football made on the rest of the team. You know, I think it was the first time all season where we've just seen Cowan Dickey, Rod, Visa get over the game line consistently. Same with Ben Curry. You know, Jean-Luc Dupree, I think, again, probably not hit the heights of 3-4 years ago. But we know what he is as a player now. He's been at the club long enough. But what we did start to see, and I think you could probably actually pin this as a key reason why Quinn's lost, is Cunningham South, Evans and Donbrandt couldn't really match that physicality in the back row. You know, I think we had a pretty stable scrum, even if it wasn't necessarily dominant. We had a clean set piece. You know, everything just sort of worked for us, I think, is probably fair to say. And, you know, I think if you're Quinns and you're playing this one back, you know, you can point to the fact that they did just get a little bit out-muscled up front. What that then meant is we had front football and we had the ability to get George Ford, get Rob Dupree in possession with time to make the right decision. And I think, again, we saw really consistent and clear decision-making from those two players. And I just want to stop very briefly on that second Aaron Reed try, because that was an absolutely outrageous pass from Rob Dupree. The bullet pass, flat as a ruler, straight across to Aaron Reed. And then you just saw, again, what impact having forward dominance, having players able to just go up through the middle, what impact that has on a defence, which now has to collapse in to accommodate that. And you then saw great quick ball, clear decision-making, and how much space did Aaron Reed have to run into. Like, it's all well and good being really fast, but sometimes you need a bit of space to actually run into. And I thought you just kind of saw everything culminate really neatly in that Aaron Reed try. And I think it's hopefully a testament for what's going to be coming for the next couple of games.
Thanks for flagging that, because what was the best thing about that pass was the confidence to go for it, because he tried it about 20 minutes before, and it had gone about 20 yards forward straight into touch, Denny, if you remember that. And everyone was going, well, I'm not sure what Rob Dupree is quite doing there, you know, and he put his hands up. All the players seemed to be like, yeah, don't worry about it, because that's clearly something they've worked on, you know. And let's not forget Ford's speed of hands as well, you know, it was a missed pass as well for Ford. So getting that ball really, really wide was something that they've obviously been spotted. And when the calls come in from the winger, they've just backed it. Get it. So it was a fabulous, fabulous pass. And before I forget, can I just flag one other player? We're mentioning them all, right? But I want to mention just Josh Beaumont very, very quickly, because you know he wasn't the best player on the pitch. He didn't dominate proceedings. He basically just did his job as a second row. He pushed in the scrum. He got up in the line out. He took some restarts, and he got around the pitch and just worked hard. But 80 minutes, Josh Beaumont, 2 years ago, we would have thought that was impossible. We would have thought he had retired by now.
I was going to say 2 years ago, we'd have thought he'd be lucky to play 8 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Just running again was training on the pitch would have been a move forward. So to get himself in a situation now where he's doing that, you know, obviously it's important for us because we're without Johnny Hill. But even so, you know, I just thought it's fantastic. And you know, let's not forget him and Tommy Taylor are that sort of previous generation of academy players who are still there, you know, and coming towards the end of their careers, maybe getting a bit more desperate now for some success. So good for him.
Well, look, it was smiles all round for Sale on Sunday afternoon. It is worth maybe taking a step back and acknowledging, as we've already done a little bit, that unfortunately that win hasn't necessarily moved us that much closer to the top four. We are still trailing Harlequins by 2 points and trailing Bristol by 3 points, but we are making meaningful progress. Now, the problem is Exeter sit below us on 40 points and Leicester sit below them on 39 points. So it really does feel like an impactful win or an impactful loss, one way or the other, can really change your outlook for those last couple of games. So we're coming into next week's fixture, that always tricky trip away to Newcastle, on high spirits, and I think we can feel reasonably confident going into that game. But obviously that's nothing to how Bristol Bears fans are feeling this week, having just put a million points on Newcastle also over the weekend. And I guess maybe that's our segue into this discussion, James, which is, from a Sale perspective, I think the team sheet probably picks itself. You know, we've just, again, one of our best performances of the season, probably don't need to change a winning formula, maybe a bit of rotation here or there. But it is an interesting proposition going to a Newcastle team, which has maybe sunk to a depth that even we hadn't anticipated before the start of this season. Is that fair?
Yeah, it is. And they've come up, they've got close in about three games, where, you know, maybe if it had been the first three games of the season, they might have got over the line. They might have had a slightly different season. But I think that the problem they've got is, you know, the signal from the club has been there, clear to see, last 2 years, right? As soon as the trapdoor is closed and there's been no relegation since COVID, Newcastle have been reducing their cost base and trying to become, you know, sustainable as a club. Like, this is not something that should be attacked, by the way. Like, I think... You know, I think that people need to understand this is the realities. And now that the risk factor of being relegated is gone, the, you know, the risk versus reward element has completely changed for Newcastle. And this is something that the Premiership need to look at and the RF need to look at. You know, we've said this before. We can't have a country where, you know, between the Northeast and Yorkshire, I mean, it's probably the highest percentage of English players ever produced by those two regions, these put together. And Yorkshire, you know, is being kept afloat from an academy perspective by direct funding from the RFU. Doncaster is not quite the strength of the team that it was before. Obviously, Leeds is slowly on the comeback, but from a very, very low position. So, you know, I'm worried, basically. And, you know, you listen to a few podcasts and they only just talk about, oh, you know, what are Newcastle for? Well, I'll tell you what they're for. They're a professional club in the northeast of England where we don't have any other rugby union at a high level, pretty much, apart from Doncaster in Yorkshire. This is a very serious situation that everyone needs to take some ownership of. Now, let's not forget, they're still a professional team. And I think conceding 80 points is a disgrace. You know, and I think that, you know, as Dimes quite rightly said at the end of the game, and we've been in this position before, you know, and he did the same when he first got to Worcester. He said, right, I've identified a few players that are not going to be here next year now. And if next year's another horror show year, great. But at least if I've got the players that I know can build from here. And, you know, they're hemorrhaging talent that haven't even proved themselves in the Premiership. Like Louis Johnson and Phil Brantingham and what was the other one? Yeah, Guy Pepper. These are people who have only got like 20, 30 games in the Premiership. and are getting now poached by top teams. And that's a very serious situation to be in, because, you know, where Newcastle sort of solidified themselves was the retaining of people like, say, Callum Chick recently, but the likes of Mark Wilson and stuff like that in previous generations, where, you know, you have people who really believed in the club and stuck around. So I'm really worried for them. But as I said, they are a professional club. They've now just, those professionals have been embarrassed. Dimes has really set the record straight here that people are now playing for their futures. They're playing for their futures potentially as a professional rugby player. So I think at home next week, they are going to be a different proposition. And the first 20 minutes could be pretty brutal, you know, from a physical perspective, because I think they're going to come out all fired up. You know, the pride's going to be really damaged from the homegrown lads. And then for the people who are literally playing for their jobs, you know, I think that it's going to be a brutal 20 minutes. So what we need to do is have a fast start as well. You know, we need to put points on the board and make them go back to that trauma of last week of just conceding and conceding. Because I think if Newcastle are still in the game at 60 minutes here, we're in trouble.
You see, that is a very interesting perspective on it. Because I will be completely honest with my viewpoint here on Newcastle, which is this is a glorified championship team at this stage.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with that.
I looked at the team sheet because I was really interested, because this is a fascinating story, right? For a few reasons, and I will touch upon it in a second. But, you know, you look at this team, okay, there's not a lot of talent. I know there's some Argentinian players, but, you know, they're not on the pitch anymore. You know, we're Matias Moroni, Orlando, they're not playing. Bayo, the prop, was on the bench, you know, and he's a captain international. Rubelo, not been seen. Again, it's all sort of very strange. And you know, Carreras has obviously gone. It's apparent, obviously, that there's probably some of those players who have just been chosen by Dimes not to play. You would expect. You can't imagine that's all injury related. But you take those players out, the investment that they do have in the squad, and outside of that, there is not a lot happening, you know, to be perfectly honest. And I do think, I understand, you know, why you've said what you said, James. You know, Kingston Park can be a tough place to go, and we have seen a bit of fight from Newcastle this year. But realistically, if we turn up with 60% of what we showed against Quins, I think even if it's a close game, Newcastle just do not have the horses to compete with us. And it might just become a case of, do we win by 6 points or do we win by 60? To be honest, at this point, it can go one of two ways. You would back a Dimes-led team to rebound in some form. But what must that do to just be blown away by, what was the final scoreline? 71 points. Yeah, 70, they lost by.
I mean, to concede 80 points as a professional rugby team, you don't even see that in the World Cups anymore between kind of New Zealand and Chile or whatever. You know, that is a disgrace. It really is. And, you know, it's a disgrace, but it's a disgrace that, you know, when I hear people talking about, not you, let's make it clear, because I actually agree with everything you've said, which is unusual. but I'm just super worried about the future of rugby in the Northeast, and we shouldn't take it for granted is the point. Yeah. But I think that a reaction is possible. A reaction will happen. That's what I'm saying. There will be a reaction. But where I completely agree with you is, if Sale do not win this comfortably with 5 tries, we've had a shocker.
Yeah, what
we
are we doing?
We haven't turned up and been our best. Because I think if we turn up and we are anywhere near our best, we will win very comfortably. I think my point is if we think this is an easy game and go up there and aren't switched on, we're still playing against a wounded professional rugby side who have got something to prove and jobs to save. And there is a possibility, if Newcastle are going to win a game between now and the end of the year, this looks like the most likely, because they're not going to win away at Bath or wherever they're going next. You know, do you know what I mean? Mm. So this against the northern, more northern rivals, the Dimes connection, what's just happened last week, if there's a set of circumstances that is going to produce a Newcastle win this year, it will be this weekend. So that's all I'm saying.
Mm. And maybe just to circle back to, you know, the context behind why we're having this conversation, I think we've said, I know I've probably said this, you know, at least a couple of times over the last few years, but what Newcastle doing is right. Like, Newcastle are being very astute and very smart with what they're doing. And the fact that it's got to this point, the fact that we are probably going to see a team go the entire season without a win, is a blight on Premiership rugby. It is embarrassing for the game. It is not a blight on Newcastle, who have made a sensible, albeit unpopular decision to cut their cloth accordingly. Now, the bigger problem from my perspective is if the team cannot compete by doing so, either they shouldn't be in the Premiership and we should have relegation. It's an absolute joke that they might go the entire year without winning a game and not get relegated. Or the other teams in the league, and this is where the Premiership rugby needs to step in, need to look very carefully at if Newcastle cannot compete in this league by not making unsustainable financial decisions, where does that leave every other team? And we see these reports every year, one out of 10 clubs has made a profit this year, and it was because Exeter have built a hotel on Sandy Park, or it's because Bath have renovated the Rec. There are only a handful of clubs that can actually survive, and the sale are, there are only a handful of clubs that can survive on their own, under their own power, and Sale are not one of them. And this need, I mean, I don't know how much clearer it can be. We don't have Wasps anymore, no Worcester, no London Irish. Those are three clubs that have gone bust because of the financial decisions they've made. I am grateful that we still have a Newcastle Falcons team, but their existence in their current state makes a bit of a mockery of how Premiership Rugby are administrating the league.
Yeah.
And it really makes you wonder about the decision-making that goes into not allowing a team like Ealing to come up, because their stadium only holds 8,000 rather than 10,000. So,
yeah,
I don't know, James. Like,
it's a big conversation, and we've been down this route before. But I don't think it's just a Premiership solution. I mean, they're right; they need a two league solution. And actually, I think the English pyramid at a professional level is struggling to find an answer that's sustainable there. You know, the most recent thing has been that, you know, there's going to be 14 or 16 teams in the Championship or something. This is the wrong way around. And we need to be going for less, but some more sustainable clubs and work towards sustainability. And you're right, you know, Newcastle have just taken an option to go, well, we're not going to rely on a benefactor losing millions like Sale are. But if our benefactor walked away, we'd have the same choice that Newcastle have. Do we cut our cloth accordingly, or do we go and play in a league where we can sustain ourselves? So, you know, look, Newcastle are just on the front line of it because they don't have a brilliant owner in the same way as we do. Well, not a brilliant owner that's willing to lose money. So, you know, I agree with you. The whole, it shows the unsustainability. Newcastle have survived because there's no relegation. Newcastle might be either, we might be under threat of losing them as a professional club, which would be a complete disaster, more so than any of the others that have already gone. Because, you know, Worcester in an area where there's lots of other clubs. Same with London Irish. Wasps, I mean, they didn't even know where they lived. So Newcastle going would be strategically for Rugby Union England far more of a bigger loss. So you're right, we're grateful to have them, but it's not sustainable at the current levels. And, you know, the club, don't forget the salary cap's going up again next year and then up again the year after, I think. So Newcastle are in really big, we need a two-league solution. And maybe Newcastle can be a professional club, but in the league below, unless there is an agreement that there is some direct funding from the RFU and that Newcastle are a part centralised owned franchise, essentially, in the Premiership, which I think is something that should be considered. And I think it's something that should be considered for other strategic areas. And you know that I am not a Wasps fan at all. But if they are going to Kent, in Sevenoaks. I think that that could be an interesting move from a strategic perspective for the RFU, because Kent is a very, it's lots of rugby clubs, but just nobody at the professional level. And, you know, it is an area that where the pathways to professionalism just aren't set. So absolutely, as a championship club, I would be open to WASC having some centralized support. I don't know what that looks like. You know, I think there needs to be this sort of strategic approach to this next tier. And I think we should be seriously open and going to speak to CVC about the four Welsh regions coming in, because I think that the it works in football. You know, the top Welsh clubs are in the English pyramid, and it doesn't stop Wales having a separate international team. And I think that it's not working for Wales in the other league. I think the other league can survive easily without Wales. Won't even notice they've gone. They'll invite in Cheetahs and Black Lion, right? It'll still be a great, interesting league. We have four Welsh clubs that, and for them, you know, every home game against a Worcester or a Bath or a Gloucester or a anyone really on that M4 corridor, it's a sellout. It's a set for Newport and Cardiff, especially. It'll be like having like just their home games will be full, and their away fans can actually make some games. So it's a no-brainer for me. I would try and have two professional leagues, but invite the four Welsh regions.
You see, you're talking too much sense here, James, because this would probably also solve the problem that they've got at the moment, which is Mason Grady or Joe Hawkins or who's going to Gloucester next season? Gareth Anscombe, I can't remember.
Yeah, Gareth Anscombe's going. Yeah. He's coming back from Japan. Yeah, and obviously Waboso's been lost to England, which would never have happened either.
I don't know, Anscombe's different because he's over the 30 caps or whatever, but you then solve the problem of
a Jared player Devin like Joe. Sequins.
Yeah, like you've got all these very talented young players who are eligible to play for Wales and do not want to play for Wales for whatever reason. Who don't want to play for a Welsh club. You would then basically solve the eligibility issue, which is if you're a player like, for example, Jared Evans, you can still have it both ways. You can still partake in playing for your country without having to go to France, where you are just kind of lost as rugby IP, so to speak, for the British Isles. We have to remember that the way that the European rugby is set up at the moment, like there is a very clear reason why players who play for France are not eligible in France are not eligible for England, because the gap there is so different. In terms of, first of all, rotation and rest policies, the money and the potential pathway and impression that can leave for other players. I think you solve a lot of those eligibility issues if you say to a Joe Hawkins or a Mason Grady, as long as you're playing in the Anglo-Welsh League, you are still eligible to play for Wales. That also improves the product from the Premiership perspective.
And the Championship. So relegation isn't as much of an issue. I mean, what it takes is a very big, bold move from Premiership rugby to water down their stake. So there'll have to be some sort of big payouts from the WRU and the RFU, which is obviously a nightmare for them because it's like, well, okay, that's not our problem. But actually, it is. They'll have to buy out these clubs. And it could still end up as a separately run thing from the RFU pyramid, which starts at National League One, which is a great league. But there's no doubt in my mind that Caldy and London Scottish and Ampthill, that they're not a sustainable professional entities. It's really sad, but I think the future has to be a franchise essential model based on clubs across the England and Wales professional organisations, where you start with you can get to 20 or 22 or you aim for 24 professional clubs, but you might have to start with 20. You bring back Jersey, you bring back Wasps, you bring back London Irish. Everyone will fucking hate this because they've been run poorly. Worcester. But I think it's inevitable. And they at least have stadia that can be used, etc. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then Newcastle, you know, don't have to feel the pressure to be in the top league, right? they can be in the league below, unless they're centrally funded to stay in the top. There might be a fudge there to begin with. But you probably have three Welsh regions joining the Premiership, one Welsh region joining the Championship. You have one division of 10 and one division of 12 or something like that. You could probably get to those numbers by adding in some of these things. Everyone has to be committed to be fully professional. There's promotion and relegation between the Premiership and Premiership 2. There is a bit like rugby league. For the next 5 years, there is no relegation from the Championship to the next level. So you've got 5 years to build sustainable business models, right, to be fully professional clubs. And there will be no relegation until there are a total of 24 clubs across both of those leagues. In any case, so it might be longer than that. Other teams will be invited up if they have a good business plan, hit some minimum criteria, and essentially a new franchise that comes up. So there will be expansion, but it won't be through promotion. It will be through, coming top of the league and meeting criteria and then moving up to get up to 24 teams. And then at some point in the future, you bring back promotion and relegation into National League One, but from a position of strength, right, where, you know, you have a sustainable two-tier model, because that is what's working in France. And they have now been able to expand into a third tier of, you know, mostly professional, some semi-professional clubs, some of which are, you know, centrally funded. Like you look at Rouen, they're now in, I think they're in Pro Deux. They've come right from the bottom of the pyramid and is centrally funded by the French Rugby Union, because it's in a part of the world where there's been no rugby. Mm. And now they're a professional club. So these kind of things, it involves the WRU and the RFU taking a lot of risk, you know, and it involves the Premiership clubs giving away some of their control. And it involves the WRU not being proud about having their own top of pyramid, and it involves CVC getting the dick out and start waving it, because Wales need this to survive, otherwise they're fucked, right? England don't need the Welsh clubs, but if they want a competitive two-tier model, they do.
I mean, look, there's the manifesto, right? There's the call to arms. There's the...
We weren't expecting that today,
were
we?
There's the plan. Well, you say that, but I actually was, because we knew we were going to talk about Newcastle, and unfortunately you just end up in the same situation and having the same conversation over and over, which is, it is time for drastic action. You've lost three clubs in the space of a year. You've basically got half a club in Newcastle at the moment competing in your top league. The time for action was 6 months ago, a year ago. But it can be better late than never, if nothing else. But it is very interesting. It does add a very interesting layer to that game up at Kingston Park at the weekend. I guess, James, last thing from us this week is a score prediction. Newcastle looking dire straight. Sale maybe on the up. This has to be a 5-point win for Sale, doesn't it? 5-point bonus win. Bonus point win.
I think if we don't score more than 45 points on their pitch, because this is not the old Kingston Park pitch, this is, you know, good to play attacking rugby, then I'll be very disappointed. And actually, if Newcastle score more than us, then probably fair enough. So I think it has to be a 5-point victory. That's what I'm predicting, and that's what I'm expecting. But I am shitting myself. I don't know why, I just am.
I'm going to go Sale 52, Newcastle 26. I think it'll be open. I think Newcastle obviously won't sort of plumb to the depths that they were at last weekend. But like I said, this Sale team at 50% capacity should have more than enough. And I think hopefully off the back of last weekend, we should have a bit more than 50% capacity. So that's the pod for this week. Thank you to everyone for listening. Thank you to everyone for sending in your three-word reviews. And I guess, James, just to wrap things up, is there anything else you want to discuss as part of this week's pod?
No, I think we've covered way more broad ground than I was expecting. I'd look forward to returning to this Prem 1, Prem 2 concept because we keep hearing about it, but I think it's going to be a complete shit show. And so I think that might be something for the off season in the summer, because we're still waiting. We've lost four clubs, if you include Jersey. And we're still waiting for the grand plan that's going to save the English professional game. We haven't seen any of it. So I can't wait. In the meantime, if people have got thoughts on what we've said today, please do drop it into Twitter. And one of us will we'll respond and let's get a conversation going. Otherwise, interested in everyone else's predictions for the Newcastle game. And fingers crossed for a win, because if we do, then we are certainly in the mix.